City and Guilds Qualifications. International ESOL Communicator Level. New 2009 CEFR Aligned Practice Paper 3. Part 1. You will hear 8 short, unfinished conversations. Choose the best reply to continue the conversation. Put a circle round the letter of the best reply. First, look at the example. You will hear the conversations twice. Number 1.
Excuse me, was that Dr. Brown I just saw coming in?
Yes, I think so.
Can I go in now, then? Excuse me, was that Dr. Brown I just saw coming in?
Yes, I think so.
Can I go in now, then?
Number 2.
We can't go tonight. I won't finish work before 6.
We might make it if we take a taxi.
No, we'd still be late. We can't go tonight. I won't finish work before 6.
We might make it if we take a taxi.
No, we'd still be late.
Number 3.
So, you're looking for an English class?
I wondered about the beginners on Tuesdays.
Oh, I think you'd cope with higher than that. So, you're looking for an English class?
I wondered about the beginners on Tuesdays.
Oh, I think you'd cope with higher than that.
Number 4.
That was an excellent talk, wasn't it?
Yes. Yes, most informative.
Do you fancy chatting about it over a coffee? That was an excellent talk, wasn't it?
Yes. Yes, most informative.
Do you fancy chatting about it over a coffee?
Number 5.
I'm afraid Mr. Jones isn't in yet.
But you are expecting him?
Oh, yes. He's usually here by now. I'm afraid Mr. Jones isn't in yet.
But you are expecting him?
Oh, yes. He's usually here by now.
Number 6.
You can make tomorrow's meeting, then?
Yes, that should be fine. What's the name of the place again?
It's the Llangollen Conference Centre. You can make tomorrow's meeting, then?
Yes, that should be fine. What's the name of the place again?
It's the Llangollen Conference Centre.
Number seven.
Where did you say you last saw it?
Well, I think it was on Joe's desk.
Well, there's a big blue file here. Where did you say you last saw it?
Well, I think it was on Joe's desk.
Well, there's a big blue file here.
Number eight.
Forecast's good for the weekend.
Really? That makes a pleasant change.
Perhaps you'll get the chance to relax in the sun at last.
That is the end of part one. Part two. You will hear three conversations. Listen to the conversations and answer the questions below. Put a circle round the letter of the correct answer. You will hear each conversation twice. Look at the questions for conversation one. Conversation 1.
Hi, Florence. How was the holiday?
What holiday? We had a problem with the builders in the house.
Oh? I thought the idea was for them to do the work while you were relaxing on the beach.
That was the idea, but as soon as they started, we realised we'd be stupid to go. We thought we'd just be able to delay it by a few days, but there was no way.
Oh, no. What a way to spend your holiday. That's terrible.
I'm really glad we did, actually. They just needed someone to tell them what to do every day. Otherwise, they were fine.
Well, I suppose it's better than worrying about it while you're away.
Absolutely. Even if we had gone, we would probably have come back early. We could go later in the year, I suppose. And I must say, they did a great job in the end.
Conversation 1.
Hi, Florence. How was the holiday?
What holiday? We had a problem with the builders in the house.
Oh? I thought the idea was for them to do the work while you were relaxing on the beach.
That was the idea, but as soon as they started, we realised we'd be stupid to go. We thought we'd just be able to delay it by a few days, but there was no way.
Oh, no. What a way to spend your holiday. That's terrible.
I'm really glad we did, actually. They just needed someone to tell them what to do every day. Otherwise, they were fine.
Well, I suppose it's better than worrying about it while you're away.
Absolutely. Even if we had gone, we would probably have come back early. We could go later in the year, I suppose. And I must say, they did a great job in the end.
Now look at the questions for conversation 2. Conversation 2.
So, now I've finished university and got my qualifications, I haven't got a clue really where to go from here.
It's a common problem. and I sympathise because it's difficult knowing what to apply for.
My parents seem to think I should apply for any job just to get some experience, but I'm quite happy to wait until something really interesting comes along. I don't mind if it takes a while.
That's one way of approaching it. But you could also take the view that it's important experience to apply and go to some interviews. There's no guarantee they'll offer you the job, but if they do, you can always turn it down and look for something better.
Yes, I suppose you're right. It's all good practice.
Yes. I've known people who've been to lots of interviews before they get a job. By that time, they're good at it, and they stand a better chance of getting the job they really want.
I think I'll take your advice.
Conversation 2.
So, now I've finished university and got my qualifications, I haven't got a clue, really, where to go from here.
It's a common problem, and I sympathise because it's difficult knowing what to apply for.
My parents seem to think I should apply for any job just to get some experience, but I'm quite happy to wait until something really interesting comes along. I don't mind if it takes a while.
That's one way of approaching it. But you could also take the view that it's important experience to apply and go to some interviews. There's no guarantee they'll offer you the job, but if they do, you can always turn it down and look for something better.
Yes, I suppose you're right. It's all good practice.
Yes. I've known people who've been to lots of interviews before they get a job. By that time, they're good at it, and they stand a better chance of getting the job they really want.
I think I'll take your advice.
Now look at the questions for conversation 3. Conversation 3.
So, would you like me to show you around before we go any further?
Yes, that would be helpful, to get an idea of the place before I decide.
Well, first of all, we have the main gym. As you can see, we have running machines, rowing machines, and all sorts of other machines. You can even watch TV while you exercise.
Wow, that's great. But how do I work out how to use all the machines?
We have trained fitness instructors on call all day. When you first start, they'll also help work out a fitness program just for you.
Brilliant. It certainly looks impressive. Can we see the pool now?
Yes, of course. The pool is full size and it has a jacuzzi.
Oh, the jacuzzi's a bit small, but the sauna makes up for that.
Conversation 3.
So, would you like me to show you around before we go any further?
Yes, that would be helpful, to get an idea of the place before I decide.
Well, first of all, we have the main gym. As you can see, we have running machines, rowing machines, and all sorts of other machines. You can even watch TV while you exercise.
Wow, that's great. But how do I work out how to use all the machines?
We have trained fitness instructors on call all day. When you first start, they'll also help work out a fitness program just for you.
Brilliant. It certainly looks impressive. Can we see the pool now?
Yes, of course. The pool is full size and it has a jacuzzi.
Oh, the jacuzzi's a bit small, but the sauna makes up for that.
That is the end of part 2. Part 3. Listen to the talk about Budapest. Make short notes about the talk, 1 to 5 words. An example is done for you. At the end of the talk, you will have 2 minutes to read through and check your answers. You will hear the talk twice. You have 1 minute to look at the notes below.
The capital city of Hungary, Budapest, was created out of the unification of the separate historic towns of Buda, Pest, and Óbuda in 1873. Whilst the area had been inhabited from early times, it was from this date that the city's expansion into a world capital really began. Budapest is bisected by the river Danube, flowing north to south, with the city as much a natural geographical centre as it is the country's transport hub. Covering an area of 200 square miles and divided into 23 administrative districts, it is home today to a population of 1.8 million people. Buda and Óbuda, comprising roughly a third of the total area, are situated mainly in the hills to the west, with commercial Pest on the plains to the east. There are three islands, Óbuda Island, Margaret Island, and Csepel Island, and 9 bridges, 7 with roads and pavements, and 2 for railway lines only. Budapest possesses a rich and fascinating history, as well as a vibrant cultural heritage. Recognizing the unique value of its traditions, it has managed to maintain its magic and charm, and is rightly known as the Queen of the Danube. As there are a dozen thermal bath complexes served by over 100 natural springs, it has also been called the City of Spas. That Budapest, considered one of the most beautiful cities in the world, has developed where it is not down to some historical accident. Take a look at Gellert Hill, right next to the River Danube, flowing majestically through the centre of the modern city. The earliest settlers decided it was the ideal place to build a town, precisely because of the combination of the relative ease of crossing the river here and the natural protection the hill offered against invasion. The Eriviski, a tribe of highly cultured Celts, settled on the slopes of Gellert Hill in the 4th and 3rd centuries BC. They worked with iron, decorated their earthenware pots, and even minted their own coins. Later, the Romans built a settlement at today's Óbuda, which they called Aquincum, a civilian town surrounded by walls, with aqueducts and paved streets inhabited by artisans and tradesmen. Budapest is truly one of the world's most attractive cities, rich in both natural and architectural beauty. It's no wonder that the Castle District and the River Danube embankments have been officially recognised as UNESCO World Heritage Sites. Visitors to Budapest will quickly see how it has managed to blend several centuries of architectural and cultural heritage with all the innovations thrown at it by modern life. Historic buildings and monuments are gradually being renovated and restored, as finances permit. And if time is of the essence, visitors would be well advised to make a plan in order to see as much as possible of this beautiful city.
Part 3.
The capital city of Hungary, Budapest, was created out of the unification of the separate historic towns of Buda, Pest, and Obuda in 1873. Whilst the area had been inhabited from early times, it was from this date that the city's expansion into a world capital really began. Budapest is bisected by the River Danube, flowing north to south, with the city as much a natural geographical centre as it is the country's transport hub. Covering an area of 200 square miles and divided into 23 administrative districts, it is home today to a population of 1.8 million people. Buda and Obuda, comprising roughly a third of the total area, are situated mainly in the hills to the west, with commercial Pest on the plains to the east. There are three islands, Obuda Island, Margaret Island, and Chapel Island, and 9 bridges, 7 with roads and pavements, and 2 for railway lines only. Budapest possesses a rich and fascinating history, as well as a vibrant cultural heritage. Recognizing the unique value of its traditions, it has managed to maintain its magic and charm, and is rightly known as the Queen of the Danube. As there are a dozen thermal bath complexes served by over 100 natural springs, it has also been called the City of Spas. That Budapest, considered one of the most beautiful cities in the world, has developed where it is not down to some historical accident. Take a look at Gellert Hill, right next to the River Danube, flowing majestically through the centre of the modern city. The earliest settlers decided it was the ideal place to build a town, precisely because of the combination of the relative ease of crossing the river here and the natural protection the hill offered against invasion. The Eravisci, a tribe of highly cultured Celts, settled on the slopes of Gellert Hill in the 4th and 3rd centuries BC. They worked with iron, decorated their earthenware pots, and even minted their own coins. Later, the Romans built a settlement at today's Obuda, which they called Aquincum, a civilian town surrounded by walls, with aqueducts and paved streets inhabited by artisans and tradesmen. Budapest is truly one of the world's most attractive cities, rich in both natural and architectural beauty. It's no wonder that the Castle District and the River Danube embankments have been officially recognised as UNESCO World Heritage Sites. Visitors to Budapest will quickly see how it has managed to blend several centuries of architectural and cultural heritage with all the innovations thrown at it by modern life. Historic buildings and monuments are gradually being renovated and restored, as finances permit. And if time is of the essence, visitors would be well advised to make a plan in order to see as much as possible of this beautiful city.
You will now have 2 minutes to read through and check your answers. That is the end of Part 3. Part 4. Part 4. Listen to the conversation and answer the questions. Put a circle round the letter of the correct answer. First, look at the questions. An example is done for you. You will hear the conversation twice.
We're delighted to welcome Nora Riffat. Nora first came to our attention as a photographer, but has now forsaken that profession for one of producer-director and has already carved herself a very prominent position in the world of cinema. Welcome, Nora.
Thanks, John. But I rather think I'm still travelling towards that position. I'm really not sure I'm there yet.
I'm sure many would beg to differ. Your films seem very natural, Nora. The relationship's real, not acted. Am I right?
I certainly aim for that, John, yes. But doesn't anyone who makes films?
Well, yes, of course. But you do seem to take it one step further, Nora. I mean, the elderly gentleman in your first film was your father, and the elderly woman your mother. One of the other characters is a cousin. Any more relatives?
No, that's all, John. It does sound a bit odd when you put it like that. But really, that was a one-off and only down to lack of funds. It worked, though, didn't it?
Indeed. Very well. Nevertheless, though, that film was about growing up in a small town in Turkey. So how close is it to your own experience?
Quite close, actually. Yes, I suppose this is really a very autobiographical film. I remember many things and they come together here. But you forget which bits are real and which fiction. I think script writing and filmmaking's like a collage.
Sorry, you've lost me there.
Okay, like writing music. You try to make everything in harmony. For that to happen, sometimes you add some sugar, some salt. Most of the films from my sister's memories, but the first part, the classroom, I wrote myself.
So you wrote some, and some with your sister. You used to take photographs, now you make films. And your sister, Emonies, also an able and prolific photographer. Did you come from an artistic family? And how did you get into filmmaking?
Actually, when I was a child, there was no art around me. I was living in a small town and the only art form around was maybe folk music and maybe film, but no art exhibitions or anything like that. I sometimes wonder myself how I incline to art.
So, did this happen when you moved to Istanbul for high school?
I really don't know. But my sister, my cousin and I all somehow inclined towards art. I remember someone gave me a present of a book about photography. Maybe that started it.
Perhaps that shows we should be very careful when we buy presents for small children.
Absolutely. I think that book changed my life. It made photography seem a very enjoyable game. I made a darkroom, developed and printed photographs, and with time I began to realise that it's an art. And my sister started photography after me.
And how did you move into filmmaking from photography?
I don't remember very well, but in those days there were no video cameras, so the idea of filmmaking was very difficult. It was in the hands of only certain people. Even after university, I still didn't think about making movies.
But you did watch them?
Oh, yes. Like everybody, I like to watch movies, but I think it was reading books about filmmaking that changed my life. Reading Roman Polanski's autobiography influenced me. His life seemed very adventurous, starting from absolute zero up to Hollywood. In that book, filmmaking seemed easy to me.
Okay, well, let's look at a clip of that first film of yours now then, shall we?
Part 4. Part 4.
We're delighted to welcome Nora Riffat. Nora first came to our attention as a photographer, but has now forsaken that profession for one of producer-director, and has already carved herself a very prominent position in the world of cinema. Welcome, Nora.
Thanks, John. But I rather think I'm still travelling towards that position. I'm really not sure I'm there yet.
I'm sure many would beg to differ. Your films seem very natural, Nora. The relationship's real, not acted. Am I right?
I certainly aim for that, John, yes. But doesn't anyone who makes films?
Well, yes, of course. But you do seem to take it one step further, Nora. I mean, the elderly gentleman in your first film was your father, and the elderly woman your mother. One of the other characters is a cousin. Any more relatives?
No, that's all, John. It does sound a bit odd when you put it like that. But really, that was a one-off and only down to lack of funds. It worked, though, didn't it?
Indeed. Very well. Nevertheless, though, that film was about growing up in a small town in Turkey. So how close is it to your own experience?
Quite close, actually. Yes. I suppose this is really a very autobiographical film. I remember many things and they come together here. But you forget which bits are real and which fiction. I think script writing and filmmaking's like a collage.
Sorry, you've lost me there.
OK, like writing music. You try to make everything in harmony. For that to happen, sometimes you add some sugar, some salt. Most of the film's from my sister's memories. But the first part, the classroom, I wrote myself.
So you wrote some, and some with your sister. You used to take photographs. Now you make films. And your sister, Emenise, also an able and prolific photographer. Did you come from an artistic family? And how did you get into filmmaking?
Actually, when I was a child, there was no art around me. I was living in a small town and the only art form around was maybe folk music and maybe film, but no art exhibitions or anything like that. I sometimes wonder myself how I incline to art.
So, did this happen when you moved to Istanbul for high school?
I really don't know. But my sister, my cousin and I all somehow inclined towards art. I remember someone gave me a present of a book about photography. Maybe that started it.
Perhaps that shows we should be very careful when we buy presents for small children.
Absolutely. I think that book changed my life. It made photography seem a very enjoyable game. I made a darkroom, developed and printed photographs, and with time I began to realise that it's an art. And my sister started photography after me.
And how did you move into filmmaking from photography?
I don't remember very well, but in those days there were no video cameras, so the idea of filmmaking was very difficult. It was in the hands of only certain people. Even after university, I still didn't think about making movies.
But you did watch them?
Oh, yes. Like everybody, I like to watch movies, but I think it was reading books about filmmaking that changed my life. Reading Roman Polanski's autobiography influenced me. His life seemed very adventurous, starting from absolute zero up to Hollywood. In that book, filmmaking seemed easy to me.
OK, well, let's look at a clip of that first film of yours now then, shall we?
That is the end of part four. You now have 2 hours and 10 minutes to complete the rest of the paper.